Blog Talk Radio.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country. I have spoken to the Vice President, to the Governor of New York, to the Director of the FBI, and have ordered that the full resources of the federal government go to help the victims and their families and to conduct a full-scale investigation to hunt down and to find those folks who committed this act.
Good morning. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I will never forget those words. I will never forget the look on President Bush's face as an aide whispered to him about what was happening, and then he gave this short declaration. None of us can ever or will ever forget where we were when we first heard about the terrorist attacks and the planes crashing into the World Trade Center. I know, for me, it was just a little over 3 weeks before Becky and I got married, and I was on my way to the hospital to visit my mother, who had just had surgery. You know how things like that happen when you're getting ready to get married or retire or whatever, how everything just seems to be coming crashing down. And I remember walking into the hospital, and there was a TV sitting there, and I saw these images of smoke coming out of the World Trade Center towers. And that's how I discovered what was going on. And I think that I called Becky right away. And Becky was just so terrified. Come back home, please. You know, we're being attacked. And I said, well, as soon as I finish talking to my mom, I'll be right back home. And from there, it was history. None of us can ever forget this day. None of us can ever become complacent that it becomes just another anniversary and we forget the horrific price our first responders paid in order to save us from this incredible tragedy. And in fact, you know, if you were up and around on that day, how you were glued to the television set and the news reports were coming out about what was happening. So right now what I want to do is play a sample of a few news reports on 9/11, and this is how it unfolded.
This just in, you are looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
I just witnessed a plane that appeared to be cruising slightly lower than normal altitude over New York City, and it appears to have crashed into, I don't know which tower it is, but it hit directly in the middle of one of the World Trade Center towers. The plane just was coming in low, and the wingtips tilted back and forth, and then it flattened out. It looks like it's hit at a slight angle into the World Trade Center. I can see flames now coming out the side of the building, and smoke continues to billow.
I said the hole takes about, what's our 6-7 floors were taken out? And there's more explosions right now. Hold on, people are running.
Listen,
hold
on just a moment. We've got an explosion inside.
The building's exploding right now. You got people running up the street.
Okay.
Hold on, I'll tell you what's going on.
Okay, just put Winston on pause there for just a moment.
Okay, the whole building just exploded some more. The whole top part.
Okay.
The building's still intact. People are running up the streets.
You are looking at this picture. It is the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, both of them being damaged by impacts from planes. We saw one happen at about maybe 9 minutes before the top of the hour, and just moments ago, so maybe 18 minutes after the first impact, the second tower was impacted by what appeared to be another passenger plane.
That's absolutely inexplicable. There shouldn't be any aircraft in that area, much less something heading what looked like deliberately for the World Trade Center Tower.
We went to a high point in our building, which is on the 25th floor, and you had a clear view of the both World Trade Centers, and the one tower was smoking hard. And there was another plane that was flying low, and we just looked at it, and before you know it, just kamikaze, boom, right into the other tower, and mass explosion, windows flying. It was horrible.
I know. When I saw the image of that second plane hit, I knew without a doubt, and everyone knew without a doubt, we were under attack. It was American Airlines Flight 175 that smashed into that South Tower. Up on my Facebook page, I have a quote. I think his name is Brian Sweeney, who has called his wife just moments before the plane crashed into the South Tower, telling her how much he loved her, how that they had been hijacked, and that this was a bad situation. And it was just moments after that, of course, the plane crashed into the South Tower. And it was evident to all that this was indeed a terrorist attack. On that day, the faith of all of us Christians were shaken by this horrific tragedy. Subsequent to that second plane hitting, we both witnessed the collapse of the Twin Towers and people scurrying and running for their lives and dust and smoke billowing all throughout the city. And when all was said and done and the firefighters were scurrying to find dead bodies, there was a mass of metal discovered at Ground Zero in the shape of a cross that managed to instill hope and healing into many of the rescuers, the first responders there, as they gazed upon this twisted cross. Hope and healing began to take place. This is a special report about that special twisted mangled piece of metal known as the cross at Ground Zero. Let's listen.
My sisters and brothers, let us pray. We pray for peace. We pray that this will never, ever happen again. Bless us from all religions together in harmony as sisters and brothers of the same God. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
On September 13th, 2001, a construction worker named Frank Seletcher of a local 731 laborers was going to World Trade Center 6, part of the recovery operation, hopefully looking for live bodies.
We searched the whole building. It took us the better part of the whole evening. We only came up with 3 bodies and no survivors.
While he was there, he did a double take, and he noticed right on the ground of World Trade Center 6, there was a structure that looked like a Christian cross.
And I directed the firefighter that was assisting me to take a look into the pit. In the middle stood the cross. It brought such overwhelming feelings to me that it dropped me to my knees in tears.
And that gave him great comfort and consolation, and he was telling people. And within 10 days later, he showed it to me, and I verified this is truly important, and this needs to be preserved and for the world to see.
But on September 23rd, when I found out about the cross which Frank Celestia founded, I made an immediate phone call to First Deputy Mayor Joseph Loda that we needed to preserve the cross and keep it ground zero. Within a few moments, I got a call personally from then Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. His father, absolutely, we will keep that cross at ground zero, a reminder of God's love for all of us.
Well, it brings back very, very strong memories of the days after September 11th. The cross was discovered 2 days after. Father Jordan was able to focus on it and put it in a very important place, right where all of the recovery efforts were going on. And then he would say Mass there every Sunday, sometimes during the week, have other religious services there. It became like a rallying cry or a focal point for many people. I know there's all these issues about religion, but this was beyond religion. This was a significant part of what happened in the days after September 11th that kept a lot of people going.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is beyond belief. The World Trade Center buildings are gone. They are ashes.
This is how we found it, September 13, 2001. This is how we see it. This will be the last day it'll be outside. It's been outside for nearly 10 years.
This was the worst attack in the history of the United States. It was intended to break our spirit, and instead of it breaking our spirit, people emerged stronger from it. That cross symbolizes that, and I'm very glad that it's going to be part of the memorial.
Now the Ground Zero Cross, which has a 10-year journey, it finally has its resting place, its final home here in the museum.
The cross means to me healing, comfort. Something to look for as an avenue to comfort your sorrow, help revitalize you. Got to remember, on that day, our faith was crushed. And through that cross, it helps rebuild our faith. Because terrorism took down the towers, but faith rebuilds our hearts.
Some very wise, insightful words. Terrorists took down the towers, but this cross rebuilt so many faiths. It's a reminder that in the midst of tragedy, that in the midst of excruciating pain, that in the midst of many questions as to why God, this twisted cross in the wreckage of the Ground Zero disaster is a reminder that God is with us, that He never leaves or forsakes us. This is a very strong reminder that in the midst of sorrow and tragedy, when we're asking the big question as to why, this cross is a reminder that God's love is greater than hate. God's love is greater than radical hate. That God is a God of mercy and forgiveness, even in the midst of great sorrow, pain, and hatred. Because those attackers, those terrorists, tried to destroy us physically and spiritually. And while they scored a major victory physically against us that day, spiritually they could not crush the Christian faith. Spiritually they could not destroy that which is given to us by God. And this cross, again, is a reminder. And it's in the museum today at the World Trade Center. Well, speaking of the Christian faith, many of us were challenged on that day. And one such person was Christina Stanton. And she is going to share with us how 9/11 revitalized her Christian faith. And it's the subject of a book that she wrote as well. So I want you to hear how evil and sorrow tried to crush our faith on that day. And instead of succeeding, it failed. And this is the story of Christina Stanton right now on the cross in the desert.
Outside this apartment building near the Twin Towers, Christina Stanton told how her husband, Brian, high up on the 24th floor, shook her awake that 9/11 morning.
He said a bomb went off in the World Trade Center. So he rushed onto our terrace, And we were just in shock.
Then the second plane roared past them to hit the second tower.
And the shockwave from that, from the plane blasting into that building actually blew us back into our apartment.
They rushed out of their building, heading for the southern tip of Manhattan, joining throngs of panicked runners. Christina chronicles it all in Out of the Shadow of 9/11.
Some people were bloodied. Other people were in pajamas, just like myself.
She describes how in Battery Park at Manhattan's tip, chaos reigned, especially with the booming sound of the first tower collapsing.
People in Battery Park had a good reason to panic, because the Twin Towers were both wider and taller than this present tower, and if they had fallen over rather than collapsed, they could have reached all the way to Battery Park and crushed people by the thousands.
Then choking smoke billowed out from Ground Zero and coated them all in yellow, sticky grime.
Everybody was caught up in the smoke and were, I'm sure, worried they were going to be asphyxiated. Everybody was running around screeching and bumping into each other and catapulting over things. And I just remember looking at Brian saying, are we going to die?
Quickly hiding behind this War of 1812 fort, the Christian couple said goodbye to each other and began to pray. That's when it hit Christina how shallow her walk with God had been.
Lord, I'm sorry that I have not put you first in my life, because I hadn't. He was always, you know, was a Sunday Christian.
All around them, people began screaming at vessels passing by and jumping into the water, and the vessels came.
This ended up being the largest boat evacuation in history. They picked up 500,000 people from Manhattan that day.
That included the Stantons, who spent many days with friends before being allowed back into their apartment, where the terrace doors had remained wide open facing Ground Zero.
And it was this huge, full-on trash receptacle. Everything was covered with about 6 inches of yellow dust. There were papers everywhere.
Area residents and workers were told this omnipresent dust was safe, but it turned out to contain some 2,000 toxins.
It was, quote-unquote, toxic soup. There's everything from pulverized concrete to jet fuel to asbestos. There were human remains.
The city rebuilt this area, but Christina and Brian, like many other New Yorkers, were out of work, unsure how to move forward, suffering from that poison and post-traumatic stress.
We ended up going to counseling over it for actually several years.
Yet out of all this darkness around Ground Zero came a guiding light.
The terrorists were shouting God is great as they crashed into the Twin Towers. But what they were really doing was a horrific act for Satan. But still, even in that horror, God was able to bring good.
For the Stantons, having stared death in the face where the towers once stood, they now realized they wanted a real relationship with the God of life and were totally dependent on him for their future. They repented.
I'd let Jesus out of a box on a Sunday, and I'd go back to my life on the weekdays. It was just a realization that I've been living my life really without God.
In her book, Christina tells how God then moved to set their future. It started with Christina reaching out to Reverend Tim Keller's famous Redeemer Presbyterian.
I went to the church, and they covered some bills for us, and we started attending there. Not too long after, I got a job there at the church planting center, and then my husband got a job there.
He's become Redeemer's chief financial officer, while Christina takes mission teams from Redeemer to minister all over the world. They saw and felt suffering during and after the attacks on this ground where the towers fell, and God's not letting that personal experience go to waste.
Our whole lives are changed because of 9/11. It certainly deepened our relationship with Christ. The only thing that matters now is glorifying God and to help others in a hurting world.
Paul Strand, CBN News, reporting from Ground Zero in New York City.
Well, it has been 19 years since we both, all of us, were mesmerized and glued to our TV sets and watching for hours on end the events unfolding in New York, in Washington at the Pentagon, and then outside in Pennsylvania as Flight 93 was headed towards our nation's capital and the White House. Tomorrow is the actual official anniversary. And I'm sure in the busy, busy week that President Trump has had with campaigning, I'm sure he will take time to be part of these memorials tomorrow. Usually I would do a program on 9/11 exactly the same day, but because of my work schedule, I wasn't able to do that. So I'm doing it the day before. But nonetheless, it still has incredible, incredible meaning. As you listen to the story of Christina Stanton, you probably couldn't relate to that. She was being very honest, very candid. You know, I was a cultural Christian. I wasn't a real committed Christian. I'd go to church on Sunday, then live my life any way I want during the weekend. And she realized on that she could have been in those Twin Towers. Her and her husband could have been victims of that tragedy. They were very close to where it happened, but they could have been there that day. And they realized they hadn't been walking with Christ, that their lives were not authentic, and they repented. And this horrific tragedy, beauty came out of the ashes of the tragedy in the case of Christina and her husband, Stanton. And they are committed Christians today. In the Shadow of 9/11 is a book that talks about what that day did to them, how it revitalized and impacted their Christian faith. As the years have gone by, and we are now remembering 19 years later, it seems like, and I don't know how to explain this, many of us have become kind of numb to the events of 9/11. We've been cavalier about remembering it, and the thing that's so dangerous is that we forget that day and what it meant. We were attacked by Muslims. We were under their surveillance. This had been a plan for many years. And what that day did, it gave an opportunity for the church to, for the first time with real effort, to reach out and forgive the Muslim community, because it's very obvious to me that not every Muslim is a terrorist. And so this gave us an opportunity, the events of that day, a special opportunity to reach out with the love of Christ to Muslims. Now, there are still many people that want to have nothing to do with the Muslim community, such hatred, such revenge that goes on. But as Christians, what did Jesus teach us? Love your enemies. Pray for those that persecute you. And so it would be a grave mistake as Christians to look at every Muslim as a terrorist. Most Muslims are peaceful. Now, in the history of Islam, it's very evident that Islam is not a peaceful religion, but we do great disservice to the gospel and to Christ by lumping all Muslims together in the same category. I realize there is a lot happening in our government today with the two Muslim ladies in Congress. A lot of us are fearing that they want to take over our country, that they want to change our Constitution. I understand the real fears that go on there. But this morning, what I want to do, I want to read to you from a book I wrote more than 9 years ago. It's a sequel to Shining Star. It's a book called Tears in a Bottle, Seeing Through Their Eyes. It's the story of a Muslim family leaving Iran to come to the United States to start a new life, to live the American dream, to become citizens. They come to the United States at the time that the Muslims in New York are wanting to build a mosque near the attack of the World Trade Centers. And there's an uproar in New York over this plan to do this. This would dishonor everything to do with remembering that day. And so Esther and her family walks into this controversy. Now, in this book, this is a very special book, Tears in a Bottle, Seeing Through Their Eyes. It's the story of Esther's relationship with a Christian woman that she meets in New York named Ariel. Now, there's a scene in this book where there's the news, the media out there talking about this plan to build a mosque, and there's a lot of media coverage, a lot of fighting back and forth. And what is going on is that this mosque is going to be built next to the World Trade Center Memorial, and this cannot happen. This is wrong. And Esther is caught in the middle of this, and she is traveling in New York City on foot one day, and she comes upon the World Trade Center Memorial, and I want you to hear what happens in this incredible story. Felt as though destiny was summoning her. The dream was so vividly impressed in her memory. Yet in all of the excitement, Esther wasn't sure why she was supposed to be there. The curiosity and the adventure was gnawing at her from deep down inside. Her heart was racing away with excitement. Destiny had driven her to the rally today to be on TV, to be seen by millions of people. There was something in the air today. Esther had been given an incredible history-altering opportunity to speak up for her people and set the record straight. Today, Destiny had called to vindicate Muslims and fight back against the stereotypes and discriminations. There had to be a purpose for her dream last night. Esther was anxious to finally find out why. Now, I describe her going to this World Trade Center memorial, and she's standing there, and she's all alone. At least she thinks she's all alone. Suddenly, another sight caught Esther's eyes. A tall, black-haired woman was standing at the railing and gazing down at the bronze panel. The wind blew a few strands of her black hair across her face. In her hand, she held a Kleenex and was daubing her eyes. She looked upset as she stood silently gazing down at the railing. Esther slowly began to approach the lady, just as she remembered in the dream. She still had no idea why she was there. What was her purpose in coming? Why didn't she just leave this woman alone? All Esther knew was that she was meant to be here. There was a passion, a gnawing at her heart, an irresistible pulling that was leading her to this exact location. Dark storm clouds began to hover over the plaza. It would soon begin raining, yet that didn't distract Esther. She felt that the dream she had was in God's perfect timing, a divine appointment. As Esther grew closer to the railing, suddenly the woman turned and their eyes met. A look of astonishment came over the woman's face. She clenched the Kleenex tightly in her left hand and stood completely still. The hand clutching the Kleenex began to tremble. Esther could see the rage beginning to build in her eyes. Tears streamed down her face. Esther wanted to flee, but couldn't move. "Why did you come here?" the woman demanded. She continued to tightly squeeze the Kleenex in her left hand. The trembling intensified. Esther was speechless. She could see the anger and bitterness in the woman's blue eyes. "I came here to be alone," the woman protested. Esther looked down at the woman's blue sweater. She noticed a name tag pinned near her neckline. The woman's name was Amanda. She apparently had just finished touring the memorial inside. "Amanda?" Esther meekly said, moving closer. How did?" Amanda answered, and then glanced down at her sweater, realizing how Esther knew her name. "Ma'am," Esther said, standing almost face to face with Amanda, "I'm sorry to disturb you." Amanda backed up against the railing in fear. Her face began to twitch with anxiety and fear. Tears rolled down her cheeks. Esther reached out toward Amanda with her right hand to comfort her. "Your people killed my husband," Amanda yelled in rage. Convinced that Amanda was about to make a scene, Esther glanced around and, to her amazement, discovered they were completely alone at that moment. Esther looked back toward Amanda. Amanda was shaking in fear and anger. "Do you know what today is?" Amanda shouted. Then she covered her face with her hands, dropping the Kleenex next to the railing. Esther slowly bent down and picked up the Kleenex. When she stood up to face Amanda again, Amanda had turned away to bury her face in her hands. Esther was desperate to help Amanda. Compassion welled up inside Esther, and yet she felt helpless to do anything else but just listen. Amanda lifted her head up from her hands. Esther noticed the wrinkles on her cheeks. Amanda had dark circles underneath her eyes as if she hadn't slept in a very long time. Esther slowly handed the Kleenex back to Amanda. Amanda took the Kleenex from Esther's hand and daubed her eyes with it. "Today would have been our 30th wedding anniversary," Amanda said, weeping. Esther walked closer to Amanda. She wanted to hold her and become a shoulder for Amanda to lean on. Amanda struggled to breathe. All of the anxiety and emotion and fear were sapping the strength and the life out of her. Amanda gazed back down at the engraved brass plate. "David is gone, gone forever," Amanda lamented. Esther bowed her head. The pain and trauma of Amanda's loss was breaking her heart. Moving closer to the railing, Esther peered down and saw David's name. Next to David's name was the name Rachel. Below Rachel's name was Amanda's name. Esther noticed Amanda was beginning to calm down a little. She could see Amanda needed to talk to someone and release all of the pain and heartache from inside her. Reaching into her purse, Amanda pulled out her wallet and removed a picture. "This was David," Amanda explained, holding up the picture. Esther gently took the photo from Amanda's hand and carefully looked at it. David had short brown hair and wore glasses. His face was covered in a soft, fuzzy black beard. "He was very handsome," Esther said with a smile, returning the picture to Amanda. For the first time since they met, Amanda managed to smile. "He looked so handsome at our church wedding." Amanda abruptly stopped, realizing she didn't know Esther's name. "Esther? I'm Esther," Esther replied, introducing herself. "Esther," Amanda said, stuttering. Amanda once again went through her purse and pulled out another picture, handing it to Esther. It was the picture of a beautiful young black-haired girl with pretty blue eyes. She looked like her mother, Amanda. Amanda once again began shaking with fear. Tears welled up in her eyes. "Esther, I tried my best as a Christian to be a good mother, but Rachel was so close to her father," Amanda explained. She paused, trying to catch her breath. Esther reached forward with her right hand and touched Amanda's trembling hand. She gently squeezed it. The trembling stopped. Rachel couldn't accept her father's death. She hated God for letting him die here on the 102nd floor of the North Tower. Esther continually, gently squeezing Amanda's hand. She could feel the pain, the hurt and the anguish flowing out from Amanda into her own hand. 6 months after 9/11, Rachel was out drinking with some friends and lost control of the car and was in a horrible accident. "I got a phone call telling me my daughter was in a car accident. I raced to the scene, but before I arrived, she had already died." Esther pulled Amanda's trembling hand towards hers and wrapped her arms around her tightly to comfort her. She held her tight in her arms, absorbing all of the pain, hurt, and fear from the many years of suffering. After a few moments, Esther slowly released Amanda and stood quietly gazing into her eyes. Amanda composed herself. She noticed the anguish in Esther's eyes. "Amanda, I too have lost those that I love to terrible tragedies." Amanda wiped her face with her Kleenex, listening intently to what Esther was saying. "When I lived in Tehran, I watched my best friend Miriam die right before my eyes. She was gunned down for speaking out against a corrupt government." "I'm so sorry," Amanda whispered. "Then I found out that Nadia, a dear Christian friend of mine, was executed, all because she shared her faith with Muslims." Esther bowed her head in despair and then slowly lifted it back up, making eye contact once again with Amanda. "What has happened to us, Amanda? What has gone wrong with the world? The world has lost its feeling, its sense of compassion and sense of right and wrong. There is no shame, no love and forgiveness. Our hearts have grown cold. We don't listen from our hearts anymore to each other." Amanda shook her head in despair. The words that Esther spoke was beginning to resonate with her heart. "I too have lost loved ones just like you, Amanda, and I truly feel your pain. I know why I'm here today. Allah has brought me to you to listen, to forgive, and to hear what your heart is saying." Esther moved closer and placed both of her hands on Amanda's shoulders. "Amanda, we need to get beyond our pain and bitterness. We have been brought together here for a purpose. We are standing together on the very place where the ugliness and horror began so long ago." Esther watched as tears began to stream once again down Amanda's face. This is the place, Amanda, where the world was changed forever on a Tuesday morning. I am convinced we have been brought here today, Amanda, by divine appointment to begin the healing of the scars. Amanda began shaking again. She could feel the conviction of Esther's words piercing deep down in her heart. Esther, I'm tired, Amanda tearfully confessed. I'm at an end. I'm exhausted. This hurt, this pain, this bitterness is destroying me inside. Tears of joy filled Esther's eyes. For the first time since she arrived in New York City, she was feeling loved and accepted. Esther's tears felt like an inner cleansing. Unspeakable joy began to fill Esther's heart. Amanda placed her hands on Esther's shoulders, drawing closer to her. When I first laid eyes on you, Esther, I was angry and bitter. Then suddenly I realized that we were both here, all alone, a Muslim and a Christian. Amanda took a deep breath. Esther could see a look of astonishment in her eyes. I realized, here we are, a Muslim and a Christian, all alone, and together at the site of one of the world's greatest tragedies, wherein one day the world was changed forever. It was then that I realized that God had an amazing purpose in our meeting. This is from my book, Tears in a Bottle. I specifically wrote this scene, this powerful scene, at the site of the World Trade Center, where a Muslim and a Christian woman meet, and together they forgive, they love, and they accept each other. This is my prayer for 9/11. No doubt it was the worst horrific attack on our country since Pearl Harbor. But we as Christians need to get beyond the bitterness and the hate. And like Ariel and Amanda and Esther in this scene, we need to reach out and love and forgive each other and to begin the healing of the scars. And I hope that as a Christian community, we will seize this opportunity as a way to reach Muslims with the unconditional love of Jesus. Use this opportunity to sit down, to talk, to listen from the heart, and extend the love of Christ to bring an end to the bitterness and to the hatred. As I mentioned to you a few minutes ago, many of us have become numb to 9/11, but here is Daryl Worley in a song asking the question, have you forgotten? Let's listen.
Hear people say we don't need this war, but I say there's some things worth fighting for. What about our freedom and this piece of ground? We didn't get to keep them by backing down. They say we don't realize the mess we're getting in. Before you start your preaching, let me ask you this, my friend. Have you forgotten how it felt that day? See your homeland under fire and her people blown away. Have you forgotten when those towers fell? We had neighbors still inside, going through a living hell. God. It took all the footage off my TV. Said it's too disturbing for you and me. It'll just breed anger. That's what the experts say. If it was up to me, I'd show it every day. Some say this country's just out looking for a fight. Well, After 9/11, man, I'd have to say that's right. Have you forgotten how it felt that day? See your homeland under fire and her people blown away. Have you forgotten when those towers fell? We had neighbors still inside going through.
Artist Daryl Worley asking the question that is on all of our minds, have we forgotten? It was 19 years ago that terrorists tried to destroy our freedom, and now as we head towards a very major election, we have in our country domestic terrorists trying to destroy our way of life and our freedom, trying to change us from a capitalist country to a socialist country. So it's almost like it seems like every day we have to stand up and fight for our freedoms, and it should never become trivial. It should never become cavalier, because Daryl Worley is saying, no matter how many times I think of that day, I want that footage shown on TV. We should never forget it. We get beyond all of the offense, the political correctness, and the hate. We never, ever, ever allow ourselves to forget what happened on that day. It's a day that changed all of our lives forever. It's a day that altered the history of this country. And now as we think back on that day, tomorrow is the official 19th anniversary. Please hug a loved one. Please forgive a bitter feud. Please talk and show appreciation and honor and respect to every first responder that you come in contact with. Please tell them how much you appreciate their hard work and sacrifice. I want to thank you for spending time with me this morning on this very special tribute. I will see you again on Monday on the Cross in the Desert. Have a very good day.